Good morning. So I think we're having a fantastic service so far. So you guys have got a very talented team ministry here in the East, and it's a great privilege to be down here to bring with us the Birmingham team ministry and to come and share this weekend with you. And I'm very grateful to the Tucker family for their hospitality to me. And I've been hearing great things about everyone else's hospitality as well. So we're very thankful for you making us feel very welcome here. And it's a great privilege as well to be able to be asked to preach. And I'm going to be preaching from the book of Judges this morning. And we're going to be looking at the life of Gideon. So you want to turn over to Judges chapter 6. So I want to look at, well, do three things today. First of all, I want to look at Gideon's call from God. Second of all, I want to look at Gideon's progression from weak to strong. And then I want to finish by sharing why this verse and this story of Gideon has really had a positive impact on my life and how it's really helped me. So if you want to read along with me in Judges chapter 6. So it reads from verse 11. It says, "The angel of the Lord came and sat down under the oak in Ophrah that belonged to Joash the Ezraite, while his son Gideon was threshing wheat in a winepress to keep it from the Midianites. When the angel of the Lord appeared and said to Gideon, the Lord is with you, mighty warrior. Pardon me, my Lord, Gideon replied, but if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? Where are all these wonders that our ancestors have told us about when they said, did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt? But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hand of Midian." So what's happening here is that the Midianites have come and they're oppressing the Israelites. The Israelites have rebelled against God, and God has allowed the Midianites to come and oppress them. And if you read the rest of the chapter, if you read the beginning, it's a particularly bad oppression. So much so that they're forced to go and hide in mountain caves and stuff in order to get rid of them. So this is where God is arriving to Gideon. So we'll pick it up again where we left off. And we can see that Gideon is not happy about the circumstances, challenging his faith in God. But God has an interesting response, which we'll look at here in verse 14. It says, "The Lord turned to him and said, go in the strength you have and save Israel out of Midian's hand. Am I not sending you? Pardon me, my Lord, Gideon replied, but how can I save Israel? My clan is the weakest in Manasseh and I'm the least in my family. The Lord answered, I will be with you and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive." So we find Gideon initially in this circumstance in a wine press, threshing wheat. But he should be threshing wheat in a big, wide, open space because he needs lots of wind. But he's hiding in this wine press because he's afraid that the Midianites are going to come and steal his wheat from him. So this is not a very mighty scene. It's not the mightiest scene. But God turns up to him and he tells him to go in the strength he has and to save Israel out of Midian's hand. But we see from his response that clearly he doesn't feel really like the right guy for the job. Like he feels weak, he feels like he's not good enough. I don't know what will be going through his mind, but it might be things like, well, who's going to listen to me? Who's going to want to follow me? I don't have the skills as a warrior, whatever it might be, whatever the reason, he doesn't feel strong enough. And as disciples, we have a call from God as well. And our call as disciples is to go and make more disciples, to go and share the message of the cross with people and to help save them from bondage to sin and bring them to a relationship with God. But I think like Gideon, who felt weak and afraid of the call that God gave him, I think sometimes we can feel afraid and not strong enough to do what God is requiring of us also. I don't know about yourself, but sometimes I can certainly feel that way, that I don't have the knowledge, or I might not be able to be, you know, good with people enough, or whatever it is, we can feel weak. But God gives Gideon a really encouraging response. And his response is that he's going to go with him, and together they'll strike down the Midianites. That they're going to work together. And if we think of the Great Commission, that's exactly how it finishes. There's this promise from God that he is going to be with us, like till the very end of the age. So we have this promise from God, but we see if you were to read the rest of this story, if you're carrying it on, you'll see that Gideon does go. He does respond to God's call. He does obey God. And we see then, therefore, that Gideon, despite his fears, was obedient to God, that he went anyway. And I think that poses for us the question this morning that, despite our fears, is the knowledge that God is with us enough for us to go? And to illustrate this point and the next point I'm going to make, I've spoke to a few people already. If you guys could stand up. We have a couple of illustrations just to make this next point. And so if you guys, you know who you are, I spoke to, if you come to the front. And I believe we're having a baptism this morning. So I believe this person should have faith, which is good. So if you would like to stand up. You come forward. So we're going to test his faith this morning and his trust. So first of all, we want you to fall back from the floor and be caught. So if you put your hands across, maybe you come to the middle so everyone can see. So we want you to, so before you start that, I was going to explain the whole thing. So we want him to fall backwards from the floor and get caught by two people. Then we want him to progress to the table. Sorry, the chair. And then the table. And then we're going to finish with the window ledge. So we want him to fall back, no hesitation. So cross your arms and then get caught. And then this is why we have all these big strong men here to catch him. Wait, he's facing the wrong way. Right, the chair. Someone's going to want to hold the chair, maybe get a few more people. Alright, so you guys, if you line up opposite each other, put your hands out, let them cross over. So, stand a little bit closer together. Alright, we probably only need about four people. But, more is good. There we go. Alright, now the table. Alright, so if you guys stand on this side, you can stand on this side. Right, we only need about six people, so three on each side. Right, one more. There we go. Right, and now the window ledge. Alright, so maybe eight people this time. So, do we think he would have been as confident to do that if rather than lots of big men there to catch him, he had some of the children from Kingdom Kids? So, why would that have been a problem? Why would he not have wanted to do that? Yeah, they wouldn't have been able to catch him. Yeah, they're not as big, they're not as strong. You see, we respond to God according to our perception of who he is. So if God is big to us, if he's mighty and powerful, then it's not a challenge or it's not as much of a challenge for us to take a step of faith. But if God is small, if he's weak, if he's distant or disinterested or, you know, in some way weak, then we think we might get dropped if we take a step of faith. So how is your perception of God this morning? You know, and if you, that's a big question. If you don't know the answer to that necessarily, or uncertain, then you can ask yourself, how is your response to the things that you read in God's Word? And how about the things, though, that challenge you the most in your faith? You see, because we do respond to God according to our perception of who he is. And we also saw, though, that there was a progression that he made from the floor to the chair to the table to the window ledge. Now the first step was the hardest one, or the first four, because at this point he had no experience. So this is just trying to trust in the people and trust in their strength and take a bit of a risk. And then when we progress to the chair, it's a new step, it's a new stage, so it still requires faith. But he has experience from the previous time, which says that he got caught then, so it's reasonable to assume that he'll be caught the second time. And then he goes to the table, which is bigger, and the same thing happens. I got caught twice before, so even though this is a new scenario, it's reasonable to think that I'll be caught again, and then it progresses from there. And this is how we make this progression of faith. And I think often, we get stuck in a rut praying for faith. So we just, I don't know about you, but just praying these desperate prayers, God, please can I have more faith, please can you help me be faithful, etc. But we're neglecting the process of taking small steps of faith and building up our experiences. And I've been debating as to whether to use this analogy or not, but it's been Sarah smiling because she suggested this analogy. But if you are wanting a child, if you're wanting a child and you're praying for a child and if you want anything to happen, then you have to be sleeping together, right? So it's ridiculous to think that you could have a child any other way, because God made it to work one way and only one way. It's the same with faith. If we just sit there praying, it doesn't matter how much we pray, if we don't act, then our faith never grows and we never progress. And I think we see this analogy in the life of Gideon. So just a few questions actually I was thinking about. So for you then, what's the initial step of faith that God is calling you to take this morning? Because that's a challenging one, just to get the ball rolling. And maybe if you're visiting for the first time today, maybe your step of faith for this morning is to ask the person that you came with to study the Bible with you, to explain what we're talking about, what this is all about. Maybe if you've been coming for a while, but you're still not studying your Bible, maybe your step of faith is to ask yourself the question, what is it that's holding me back? And how do I need to deal with that in faith? What step do I need to take to overcome that hurdle? And maybe if you're being a disciple, you've been around for a long time, it might be the case of what can you do to help that person that might intimidate you at school, or maybe at work, or you know, maybe it's been on your heart to want to give more sacrificially, but that's going to require a step of faith. But whatever it is, there's steps of faith that God is calling us to take. But we have a decision as to whether we're actually going to take that initial first step or not. But we're going to look at the life of Gideon. It covers a couple of chapters, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. But I'm just going to refer to it. And we're going to look at this progression from Gideon being weak initially to growing to be a mighty warrior for God. So where we left the story before, he's just received his call from God to go and save Israel, but he feels weak. And he doesn't feel strong enough and stuff, so he wants to make sure that it's definitely God speaking to him. So obviously, him talking to him in a wine press was not sufficient, so he asks for a sign from God, and he gets his sign, and he's excited. So God then commands him straight away to go and tear down his father's altar to Baal. And Baal was a false god, a false idol, and he asked him to go and tear it down. And replace it with an altar to God, the one true God. And he obeys, which is great, but he does it at night because he's afraid of what his father will think of him, what his family will think, and what the rest of the men of that town will do. But at least he obeys, which is good. But then if you follow the story on, the Midianites and a lot of the other eastern peoples kind of gang together, and they cross over the River Jordan into where Gideon and his people are. And then the Spirit of the Lord comes upon Gideon, and Gideon blows a trumpet, summoning to him all the men of Israel to come and defend and come and fight. And I think it's interesting that the Spirit of the Lord had to come upon Gideon to do that. I wonder if he would have had the courage to do that by himself. But nonetheless, all these people arrive for him, ready to fight, and we find out later on this is 32,000 men. And then he gets his men together and he asks God for another sign, because he's still not certain if God really wants to use him. So he asks for another sign. And then God graciously gives him that. And then he's still not certain, so he asks for another sign. And then he gets that one. And this wastes 2 days. Kind of all this hesitation is wasting 2 days. And then he finally thinks that God's with him. So he gets his army together and they're ready to go and face the Midianite army. So then God says to him in Judges chapter 7, starting in verse 2. He says, sorry, I'll let you guys turn there. He says, you have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel will boast against me. My own strength has saved me. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead. So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. So I don't know about you, but I think Gideon's perception of God is very much being tested here. We find out later on that the army he's facing is an army the size of 135,000. And it describes the number of their camels being more numerous than the sand on the seashore. Like, so this is an enormous army, so he's already vastly outnumbered, and then 22,000 of them leave. But God decides that he still has too many. So he's like, sorry, you've still got too many. I'm going to devise this task that's going to dwindle down the numbers of men even further. And then this test dwindles it down to 300. So he's left with 300 men. And God says in verse 7, that with the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. So Gideon's just gone from 32,000 men down to 300 to face an army of 135,000. Now, if my math is correct, that's a ratio of 450-1. Talk about being outnumbered. So I think that his perception of God is really seriously being tested. How big and strong is God really in his eyes? Like, is he really going to catch him? Is he really going to deliver him? Is he really going to help him? Or is he just going to fall and hit the floor? And so he doesn't know what to do, so God gives him yet another sign at this point. And he hears this an interpretation of a dream, and this inspires him to go. So he gets his men together, and they go and they stand at the edge of the Midianite camp at night, and they have with them torches, jars, and trumpets. So this is not really your kind of weapons of warfare, but they stand there and then they smash their jars, they blow their trumpets, and they hold their torches in the air, and they shout for the Lord and for Gideon. So they basically just make a really loud noise. And then they just stand there and they just watch. And what they watch is they watch God cause the Midianite army to turn on themselves and start killing each other. So they see the Midianite army just attacking one another. So they're just watching from the sidelines. And this is all happening because they just made a loud noise. And then, they see all this happening, so they go and join in. You know, and they just go and attack them, and they go and they wipe out 120,000 of these guys, killing their kings as well. So we see that in this circumstance, Gideon would have been looking at himself thinking about how was he strong enough, was he able to do it? But in reality, he just had to make a loud noise next to them, and God did everything else. You know, it's always going to be about God's power and God's victory. So Gideon takes his 300 men, and they continue to pursue the Midianites back across the Jordan River, and they take back their land, and they go back into their territory, and then they come across the remainder of the army, and it's 15,000 men hiding in a valley. And then he takes his 300 tired, hungry soldiers, and he attacks them straight away. But this time we don't see him asking for signs, and we don't see him hesitating and worrying and wanting to know if God's really with him or not. We see him being decisive. We see him being courageous and bold straight away. You know, I think it certainly takes a lot of courage if you've got 300 tired men to go and attack an army, this time with a ratio of 50-1, and you go and attack them and you kill them all. And then it says, if you finish up in Judges chapter 8 at the end of the story of Gideon, you just turn the page, it reads in verse 28, it says, Thus Midian was subdued before the Israelites and did not raise its head again. During Gideon's lifetime, the land had peace for 40 years. So God was able to take Gideon from the winepress all the way to being the man who was the military leader that restored peace to Israel and kept peace in Israel for 40 years. But Gideon began as the man that was weak and afraid initially and scared, but God used him in a powerful way. You see, because why did God use Gideon? Like, you know, was it because of his strength? No, I mean, was it because of his superior knowledge of warfare? Or, you know, was it because of his bravery or his courage? Or, you know, it wasn't because of any of these things. I think it was because he was willing to take a step of faith in the strength that he had and entrust himself to God to do the rest. You know, and interestingly, God took away from Gideon all that Gideon trusted in. You know, he took away all of his men. You know, he was already outnumbered, and then he was really, really outnumbered. And he took all of it away because God wanted to show her his power through that circumstance. You know, and he wanted to show his mighty deliverance of the Israelite people again through Gideon's life. And he needed to teach Gideon, I think, a very important lesson, and that was to trust in the right place. Because it was very important for Gideon to learn to trust in God, because that meant that Gideon could far exceed anything he could have done by himself. That there was no limit to what Gideon was able to do if his trust was and faith was in the right place. And this testing of his faith was essential in his journey towards being a mighty man of God. That God wasn't being mean to him. God was just training him. You know, and God does the same thing for us. He trains us. And we see that Gideon was able to get better over time. And we too have the same ability to be able to get better over time if we continue just to have the faith to take steps of faith in whatever strength we have, just entrusting ourselves to God. And I said at the beginning that I wanted to share why this was a helpful story for myself. And when I was 18, I went to the University of Reading. So I started university, and I was excited to go down there. I was the only disciple from our church, so I was going to be starting a campus ministry by myself, along with Richard Bailey, who was going to help me out. And you know, I was enthusiastic for what we were going to do, and I remember thinking, how hard can it be? Like, you know, and I'd had some friends that had gone ahead of me, you know, and a year or so older, and no, they hadn't converted anybody, and I just kind of looked at them and thought, well, they just must be a bit lukewarm, and they're not trying very hard. You know, like, this, what's wrong with them, you know? And I kind of had all these expectations for what was going to happen, and I went in there confident, and I was chatting with lots of people, and we had quite a lot of people coming out to a Bible discussion. We were studying the Bible with a lot of people, and but it began to become about me. I remember Ben May went to Warwick University, and I was really concerned that he would have, in my mind, a better campus ministry than me, because he too was by himself. So it was starting to become about myself and looking at myself and a lot about my own strength. And I had my own plan of how I was going to do it and how it was going to happen and stuff. And it was very self-reliant. And then I remember, though, I did genuinely want to help people. So I was praying, God, please can you use me to help people? You know, please can you, you know, in times of really being connected to God, I was like, God, can you really mold me in my character to make me effective for you? And that was kind of a bold prayer now in hindsight. And it was kind of strange, though, because I went there really confident with all these expectations, and suddenly I started feeling really anxious. Now, I'm used to feeling a little bit anxious because I am, you know, I am a shy person in my nature, but this was something completely different. This was very different. I started feeling very claustrophobic, and I didn't understand on earth why on earth this was happening to me. And it got worse and worse, and I started kind of having, effectively, you know, panicking, you know. So I'd be red in the face, my heart would be pounding, I'd be racing, I'd be sweating, I'd just be, it's panic, it's genuine panic in these circumstances. And I was thinking, what on earth is happening to me? This has never happened to me before. I don't know what's happening. I didn't want to speak to anyone about it, though. I didn't want to be open about it, because it was really not the self-image I had of myself, or that I wanted to portray to other people. Yeah, at this point I was playing rugby. I did a lot of extreme sports. I went to the gym 6 times a week. I did officer training with the army. This was not who I was trying to be, and it was just really humbling for me to think what was happening. So I just tried to hide it. You know, I tried to hide it, tried to put my confidence in other stuff, and at the same time a shoulder injury from rugby came back, and it came back much, much worse. And it had loads of problems with physio, and I had to stop all of my training, and I had to stop my sports, and I had to have an operation and stuff. So I lost loads of weight, and I couldn't play sports anymore. So I had to go and buy new clothes even, because everything was way too big. So I put a great deal of my self-confidence in how good I was at sports and how strong I was and stuff. And then I'm feeling like, so that's taken away from me. And then I'm suddenly freaking out, being anxious and being scared of all these things. And that just got worse and worse over time. So I didn't want to I stopped wanting to go to lectures. I stopped wanting to go to, even to church, you know, whatever it was. I hated crowds, absolutely hated them. So I still kind of sit on the edges a little bit now, if you've noticed from before. But all this stuff was, but it was getting worse, and it was getting down, and it got to the worst point. I remember just having, like, my prayer was just to be normal again, because you keep retreating from life and everything keeps getting worse and everything keeps getting harder and harder, so you hide away. And I remember that probably the worst day, just having to pray, it taught me how to pray like I'd never prayed. I had to pray on my knees just for the courage to go across the street and buy some milk and come back. Like, that was as bad as it, that's how bad it got. And if I was lucky if I ever made it through a church service without leaving. And that's just in a place with my friends that I knew that loved me. And it was really definitely challenging. It got depressing at that point as well, because you're hiding away from people, from life, from circumstance, and you're starting to think, how am I going to lead a normal life? And as a disciple, how am I going to help anyone? And I remember as well, you know, just thinking, God, if this is going to be my life for the rest of my life, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. Like, no, you promised me heaven. Can I come there now? Like, is there a way of me coming sooner? Because this is, I'm not enjoying this at all. You know, and it was definitely really challenging. But I remember reading in the scriptures this idea of boasting in your weakness. And that challenged me so much, because I didn't, not only was I supposed to be open about my weakness, but I was supposed to boast about it. I thought, no way. But it was so challenging. So I kept trying to hide it and trying to deal with it myself and on my own strength. But it just got worse and worse and worse. So I remember reading it, you know, just spending a lot of time reading of what Paul was saying and then trying to put it into practice one day. When I'd had enough, I said, okay, God, I'm going to do it your way. So I decided to tell people and to be open with people. I started with my family, with my mom and dad and my sister, and then started to, some of you know, Killian and Ben. I started to chat to some people and be open, and it got easier when I did that. And it got a little bit easier to cope with it. I decided to pursue humility rather than to cling on to my own pride. You know, I decided just to be open about the way that God had made me, even if I hated it and I didn't like it and it wasn't who I was used to. I decided just to be open about it. And, you know, there's that saying that a problem shared is a problem halved. And it definitely became that way for me, that, you know, if I talked about it more, then it became a little bit easier to deal with. And I remember reading, though, about what we just looked at with the story of Gideon, about him feeling weak but being told to go in the strength he had. And my mom gave me this challenge to have a book, which I had, which was to write down every success that I had. You know, that every time I did something successful, every small step of faith I was able to take, then I would write that down. Because I needed to retrain my mind to think positively about myself. Because what happens is you just get more and more nervous about something, so you psych yourself out before you've even done it. So I needed to retrain myself of every small step, and I made this decision that I was going to go and do everything I was afraid of doing until I wasn't afraid of it anymore. And that really challenged me, because you just have to keep going back and back and back, and it was humiliating and it was tiring, but it took a lot of strength that I didn't have for myself. I spent countless hours walking around the lake on campus in Reading, just praying and praying and praying, but it was this idea of just going with the strength I had and trying to do something, because I had to make a decision: either I remain this way for the rest of my life or I change. And there's no chance I was going to allow it to defeat me. I just did not want that to happen. And my biggest fear was, how on earth am I going to help someone become a Christian in this state? You know, when I hate going to lectures, I hate anything, any social event is just terrifies me. Like, how on earth am I going to do this? You know, and through this whole process, though, I'd made a vow to God when I was a younger disciple that I would never turn down an opportunity to serve him, regardless of what it cost me. So even amongst this, I was still going to internships and still doing communions and putting myself out there, but I didn't have the faith to think God would be able to use me, though, in some way to help someone. But I was really grateful, though, because in my third year at university, I was able to study with and baptize Toby Williams. Some of you guys might know Toby Williams, and then Jack Leghorn as well. You know, that God was able to somehow use me, and even in this state that I thought was impossible, he still used me to help them. And at some point in my third year, it all kind of started to go away. You know, it kind of came pretty quick in my first year, and all this stuff started to kind of go away in my third year. But my confidence was certainly shattered by this point, you know, and it definitely taken some time to rebuild it. But I got this offer to go to Birmingham to do an internship. And I just thought, God, you must be crazy. Like, so you want me to go and do a job that requires me to public speak constantly, like to be at the front and preach, to do Bible talks at the front, to, you know, to have to be social with people. Like, you must have the wrong person. Like, genuinely, like, what on earth are you thinking? But I remember, you know, Gideon had to obey and go anyway, you know, so I thought, well, I don't want to be disobedient, that's a lot worse. So I went in the strength that I, you know, in the little strength that I had, but I, it was a big wrestle for me to really have the faith to think God would use me. And I kind of went, but not knowing what to happen. But it really encourages me if I look at the time I've spent in Birmingham, because you know, God has helped me to study with and baptize 8 people in that time that we were there, that I've been in Birmingham. And some of the guys are sat here in the audience. And it really inspires me, because I think God has really shown me in my life that if I commit to giving Him the best that I have, then He will come through for me and use the little that I have to do great things for Him. Then it's not about my strength. And I think, you know, in the life of Gideon, it wasn't about his strength. It was all about God's strength. And God has definitely helped to mold my character. You know, I think, why did He allow this kind of 2-year period in my life or so? I think there's many reasons. I think, certainly, first of all, I needed to be humbled. I was very arrogant, I was very proud, I was very self-sufficient. I needed to learn to have a much more sober judgment of myself, but I needed also to learn to rely on God in a very different manner. You know, I used to have to, you know, pray on my knees all the time, which I was lucky if I had like 5 minutes prayer as a teen before that. You know, it changed my prayer life completely, but it also showed me that, as I think you showed Gideon too, that it's all about God's strength. It's all about God being glorified. It's not about me being glorified. It's all about God. And He taught me that I'm able, and so is anyone else, able to overcome whatever challenges they face in their life, as long as they just commit themselves to just going in the strength that they have. That if they have a determination to obey God and to continually just step out on faith time and time again, then God can use that. Like, God only doesn't use people if they don't want to be used, if they're not willing to be faithful and take steps of faith. So I just want to encourage you this morning. You know, if you're feeling afraid, if you're feeling you know, that something in your life is holding you back, or you know, you're controlled by something, or that, you know, if Satan's lying to you, telling you that you can't be used by God to help someone, you know, if you can't overcome whatever it is in your life, then I want to implore you to remember the life of Gideon, and to remember the lesson that God is teaching you through the life of Gideon, that God is able to take a weak, scared person, and He's able to do mighty things with that person. And He's able to do that simply on the basis that that person is willing to have the obedience to obey God's command and just give God the best that he has and leave the rest to God. Amen.
Yeah, I want to thank Dave for that message, and I could really relate to a lot of things he shared about himself. But also when he talked about having strong faith and seeing Alex fall off various objects, yeah, that was quite convicting for me. Not him falling, but even as a young Christian, I have struggled with trusting God sometimes, and the problem was that I didn't see God as the big, powerful God that He is. And so I wouldn't think that he'll catch me if I fell. The message was a good reminder that it's not really about me. It's about me letting God do stuff in my life and act in my life, and then trusting that he will catch me if I fall, and that he can help me through any problems that I have, and that no matter how big they may seem to me, they're tiny to him. So just really letting him act in my life. Yeah, thanks.
Well, I thought today has been an incredibly refreshing service. I want to thank Dave as well for a fantastic message. Thanks for being so open and vulnerable. Really, really challenging the conviction. And I'm going to try an illustration like that next week when I get someone to fall off a building or something. I don't know.